You're welcome to La Pausa Pod, where I'm joined this week by my trusty partner, Jamie, but we also have Alex from the Spanish Segunda podcast on this week. Alex, how are you doing? You're joining us from Mallorca. All good on the island?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. All doing well here. Starting to warm up a little bit. And just as the football season's starting to warm up as well. Last 10 games in Segunda coming up. And it couldn't be closer from top to bottom.
Yeah, that's why we had you on. We're eyeing the run in now. 10 games left for most teams. Albacete are playing at the moment. Jamie, how are you doing?
Truthfully, I've got a pretty nasty flu, but I didn't want to miss this one because we're doing a Segunda special, and we've not had as much chance to talk about Segunda this season as we would have liked. So, yeah, I'm going to fight on.
You need to get yourself over to Mallorca, some nicer weather. But
yeah,
I think when you choose an island, it's generally Gran Canaria, no?
Yeah, it'll be Las Palmas if anyway.
Yeah. Right, lads, so let's get stuck in here. As Alex was saying there, it is really tight in the Spanish Segunda. So Leganés are leading, then you've got Espanyol, Elche, Eibar, Real Valladolid, Racing Santander, Sporting Gijón, and the list goes on. Burgos, Real Oviedo, Levante made a comeback against Elche on Sunday night, winning 3-2, and they've kind of been on the march now under Felipe Miñambres. We're going to get into that in a minute, but just to get started, this is going to be an overview of the Spanish Segunda. We're not going to go too deep on any one team or one specific area, but we're just going to kind of talk generally so to give people an idea of what's going on around the league. So we asked Alex to pick out three players who have really stood out for him this season, and he's sent us back three. We'll start talking about them straight away. Martin Brathwaite is the first one for Espanyol. He's got 18 goals in 29 games in Segunda this year, the most of any player. He scored 37% of Espanyol's goals in Segunda this season. Only Alex Forez at Villarreal B has scored a higher percentage of his team's goals in 2023-24, and he's currently injured. What does that do to Espanyol's chances, Alex?
Well, almost kills them. If I'm frank, in terms of, sorry if there's any Espanyol fans out there listening, he is just so influential. But more importantly, in terms of what they have behind him, in terms of a replacement whilst he's injured, and I think early sort of news on his injury is that it's maybe 3-5 weeks. But those 3-5 weeks alone, crucial, because obviously there's only 10 games left. And yeah, what they have behind him is not a great deal, to be honest. And his Keita Balde is one of those players, and he got injured this weekend as well, so he is out. Javi Puado has played up top a little bit, but he's not sort of an out and out striker. I wouldn't say he comes off the wing better and is a lot more comfortable in that role. And Perry Miller, who, of course, was with Elche last season, and Espanyol bought him in it was in August, the season that actually started, I think, transfer deadline day, perhaps, or very close to. He has just had a shocker, really, since he's gone to Espanyol, really hasn't managed to get started. So Brathwaite's absence is huge for Espanyol, and they will hope that he gets back on the pitch as soon as possible.
So your second selection, Alex, was a guy I wasn't surprised to hear at all, and that's Racing's Íñigo Vicente. I would read a lot of the stats I've found on him today, but frankly, the list is just astonishingly big. This is, if you're talking about creative prowess, this is probably one of the best individual creative seasons we've seen in Segunda in recent memory, and at least since Opta Records have begun. So just to give you one, probably my favourite one is his expected assist rate this season is the best of any player in the second divisions across Spain, England, France, Italy and Germany, which is 0.38 per 90, which, if that's too technical for you, it's basically to say He's created chances that are worth about 11 assists this season. So whether he's got that number or not, that's pretty much what his creation has been worth. So yeah, was he the second guy that came to mind for you, Alex, or or was he first probably?
I think the first thing that I did was I thought of goals, which is why Brathwaite came to mind, and obviously the monster of a player that he is in terms of level for Segunda Brathwaite. Vicente is a no-brainer, really. He passes both the stats test and the eye test. You know, you watch him play and you can't fail to miss him in terms of his quality. But obviously, any metric that you decide to look at, pre-assists as well, he ranks very highly on those. I don't know if you dug down that far as well. And he's just involved in, well, he and another player who we might talk about in a minute, just involved in everything good that Racing Santander do. And they're an absolute joy to watch. For anybody out there who doesn't watch a lot of Segunda, who watches La Liga, who maybe thinks, do you know what, I can make room for one game of Segunda a weekend. If Racing Santander are playing at home, and they are a hugely different team away from home compared to at home, so I would say if they are in El Sardinero, then I would say watch them. You know, if the La Liga matchup at that time is not the most sparkling, without a doubt, watch them, because Inigo Vicente and Peque, who perhaps we'll dwell on again in a minute, they just have so much quality. But it's not only that, it's the way that Jose Alberto Lopez, the coach of Racing Santander, allows them to go and play. And they leave themselves very open as a result. And you are guaranteed as an away team at El Sardinero to get chances. For example, this weekend, Eldense had their fair share of chances, scored in stoppage time, actually had the ball in the net another time as well. And for that reason, we've seen some absolute cracking games. Just a few weeks ago, they played Tenerife in El Sardinero. I think they were a goal down. They were then 2-1 down, and they ended up winning 4 or 5-2 in the end. I think it was just really, really good to watch. And Vicente and Peque are just a level above most attacking players in Segunda.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons why I watch Segunda. You're kind of looking for the next big talent. You're looking for the team that's invested in youth, and Racing Santander are definitely that. It doesn't tend to work out for teams like that, because you look at, like, and maybe this is for a different reason, you look at like Villarreal B and some of the reserve teams, and they don't do generally well. But then occasionally you do get a team like Racing Santander, who are in sixth now, and after their win on Sunday. But at the same time, yeah, and you couldn't rule them out now either. Like, I mean, and for the reasons you just stated, you put them up against anyone over 180 minutes, and they could beat them just because of that firepower up front. An old Rayo favourite, Andres Martin as well, playing occasionally. I don't think he starts that regularly, but he plays too, another young player. But yeah, the next player that you picked was Peque Fernandez, Barcelona, La Masia graduate. He's completed 63% of his take-ons in Segunda this season. Scored again last night. Of all the players to attempt 50-plus take-ons, only Real Valladolid's Ivan Sanchez has a higher success rate with those take-ons. So Peque is just, yeah, he's just lightning on that left-hand side, really, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's actually playing in the number 10 position, and you've got Vicente playing on the left-hand side. And last season, Vicente was playing a little bit more in the number 10 role and has been pushed left since Peque's come into the side. But, you know, he is a fantastically skillful player. Actually, he's one of those players that you look at the stats and you go, well, he's got all these goals. And then you dig a little bit deeper and you could be forgiven for mistaking the fact that actually the stats show that he has more impact than he does if you didn't watch any of the games, because a lot of his goals have been penalties. He takes penalties for Racing Santander, and obviously that's inflated his goal tally a little. But in terms of his overall contribution on the pitch for Racing Santander, it is huge. You know, he can unbalance the defence, unbalance a defender. He can go left, he can go right. He's got quick feet. He's very intelligent. He will receive the ball in tight areas, and he's an absolute joy. And if Racing Santander are to hold on to one or both of these players in the summer, then they're going to need to get promoted because, you know, certainly I know Inigo Vicente's got a fairly decent contract behind him. I'm not quite sure on Peke's contract situation, but those two players will be very, very sought after for sort of mid-table to lower lower table La Liga sides, without a doubt. Without a doubt, yeah.
I think I'd heard you on your podcast talking about the penalties and Peke thing where, you know, can we really include penalties in the total for a player on the top scorers list? But after last night, he's actually now on 9 non-penalty goals this season, which I think I'm right in saying Brathwaite, Forres and Jean Bautista are the only players that have got more non-penalty goals this season. So he's kind of crept up on that side as well, which is it's a really good return for a player who plays the number 10, like you say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that, for people that don't listen to the Spanish Segunda show, that's my little bugbear. I don't think that top scorer lists should have penalties in because, you know, if goalkeepers can score them in the shootout, then we shouldn't be valuing them quite as high as a striker getting his head on one or nipping a head on a cross or something like that requires a lot more skill than a set-piece situation like that. But, as you say, his non-penalty goals and his non-penalty contributions are fantastic. And more than anything, you know, why do we watch football? We watch football to be entertained, and the stats sort of tell the story of that entertainment, don't they? And you know, Vicente and Peke are both players that will entertain you if you watch them. It's not just the fact that they're at the top of the stats charts in Segunda for why they've been picked by me on this one, really.
Yeah, and speaking of the Spanish Segunda podcast, one that all our listeners should go back and listen to is your interview with Leganés owner Jeff Lunau. He's the CEO of Blue Crow Sports Group, and Alex interviewed him on going back maybe a month, and Jeff was really interesting as to why he picked Leganés. And one of the things that I got from him is that he was invested, they want to invest in the club because they feel like it's in an area of Spain that if they got this right, they could turn Leganés into a properly decent sized club. Now, having said that, when you go and watch Leganés, I wouldn't say that they're team is they're laden with talent, but they are at the top of the league, got off to a really good start, and they're the team to catch at the moment. Can you, if you were to explain to somebody that hadn't watched Leganés, what, say for example, if they do go up and people are kind of interested in who are Leganés, what are they, how would you go about describing them to someone who lists and who hasn't seen them before?
Well, first of all, we're probably seeing a couple of different versions of Leganés really across the season. You know, as you quite rightly said at the beginning of the season, they started strong, but they very much did it from quite a defensive point of view. They would play quite often with 10 behind the ball in a low block, which won't be music to the ears of any La Liga fans because obviously there's hopefully a few less as time goes on low block teams in La Liga, but Leganés were certainly one of those. They were losing the possession competition in individual games against teams almost every game, but coming out on top. But they've evolved across the season. They're still defensively very, very strong. They play usually with five at the back, with wing backs, but do sometimes switch that up and go to four, depending on the opponent, depending on player availability and that type of thing. And sometimes a 4-4-2, sometimes a 4-3-3. But they've got lots of quality in defence, particularly Sergio González at the back, who has had an impact in the opposition box as well. I think 6 goals he's got now after his goal at the weekend. And then as you go forward through the team, they can now and have increasingly become more dynamic on the break and in attack. They've got quality there. Portillo, young striker Diego Garcia, who's picked up a fair number of goals. Danny Rabah, who some La Liga fans might remember, and Miguel de la Fuente, who was promoted with Alaves last season and then has come out away from Alaves. And a young player, I think he's on loan from Betis, Juan Cruz. So there is a lot of attacking quality there as well, built on a very, very solid base. And they just have this, they are mentality monsters. You know, they had 10 men a couple of weeks ago away to Amorebieta. And Amorebieta were at the time bottom of the table, but are on a terrific run the last seven games. And not only did Leganés hold out and not concede, they went to the other end and won the game 1-0 with 10 men. This weekend just gone against Villarreal Bay, they were a goal down going into the last 10 minutes. Not only did they get a goal back, they got two quick goals and they won it 2-1. So, and that's, yes, a Villarreal team that's in the relegation zone, but a Villarreal team who are very strong at home. So, you know, this Borja Jiménez team are mentality monsters, and, you know, they're going to need to add to be able to compete in La Liga, but they will not give away any games easily.
Yeah, as Robbie said, definitely go check out that podcast with Jeff, because it was really interesting. And on that podcast, he obviously spoke in nice terms about Borja Jiménez as the manager, which of course he's going to do. But just on the manager himself, do you like, let's say they do go up this season, do you reflect on it as a job well done in isolation this season, or do you see him as a genuinely promising young Spanish coach that could go on to do more in coming years?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think it's definitely a job well done. I think stylistically, I think the issue could be stylistically. I think sometimes you see managers such as Garcia Pimienta, who we had last season at Las Palmas, and obviously he's still there now, and you see them come in and you sort of, he's obviously done a terrific job this season with Las Palmas, and you sort of think, well, he's done exactly what Jeff Luno was saying he wants to do with Leganés. He's pushed them and elevated them up towards the playoff places. But there's a different, very different style of play there to what Garcia Pimienta is doing, and a style of play that you could see being applied at top clubs, where the onus is necessary to be a little bit more on the front foot to be successful and up towards the top end of the division. So, you know, definitely a manager who I can see knocking about Segunda, top end of Segunda and La Liga. But in the same way that someone like Luis Garcia Plaza, obviously he's had two or three different successful promotions at clubs, but still was finding it quite difficult to get his foot in the door at a La Liga side and needed to drop down the division to come back into Spain when he went to Mallorca. And then even after that success of promotion with Mallorca, he had to do the same again when he went to Deportivo Alaves and was successful. So I think I could see him more in that sort of mould as a manager who's going to be around the professional leagues without a doubt. But perhaps the style that he employs with his team might not lead him to get a job at a team that's more solid in La Liga.
Mm. Yeah, well, we a good example of that might be Eder Sarabia, who just got sacked by Andorra today, and we might touch on him on a little bit later on. We were just wondering, myself and Jamie, where he might end up. I mean, it didn't work out in the end at Andorra, and he plays a very open style, but it is the kind of style that might translate to a better quality player or better quality squad. So moving on then to Elche, we've touched on Espanyol. Elche are level on points with Espanyol in second and third on 53 points. Elche, it's safe to say they collapsed last night against Levante, although it wasn't maybe, yeah, like they did, yeah, okay, maybe collapse is too strong a word in terms of how they played, but they let in three goals late and lost 3-2, so I guess that is a collapse. They had a great defence. They've conceded five goals now in the last two games, and yeah, based on the quality of shots, up to have Matias Dituro, the goalkeeper, as preventing 5 goals in just 990 minutes played so far. It's really interesting what they're doing. I tweeted out earlier about how they're playing Mario Gaspar, the centre back, played in almost like 5 different roles, positions last night, and has been doing that. John Donald, the centre back / defensive midfielder. It's quite an interesting style, the way that they play. So great defense, really interesting style of play. How do you see their chances of going straight up automatically? And then if they can't do that, how do you see their chances of making it through the playoffs?
I think firstly, in terms of automatic promotion, they stand a great chance. I'm going to say that Leganés have got one of those two places locked off, I would imagine. Partly because I don't see two teams overtaking them. Perhaps one, perhaps they might not win the title, but obviously the most important thing is the promotion. So I think that it boils down really to, at the moment, you're looking at realistically Elche, Espanyol, Real Valladolid and Eibar. And I think of those four, I would say that I fancy Elche to be the strongest of those four. Partly because they have the momentum. Obviously, they lost at the weekend, but very positive momentum in terms of how they've been playing in this second half of the season. Espanyol don't have that. They also don't have the star centre forward at the moment. They have issues in that part of their squad, as we just discussed. Eibar have been a very streaky team this season and go on a good streak and a poor streak. And I think Real Valladolid will not sustain a top two challenge into the final few games of the season. But I have them as probably going up automatically, partly because of their qualities versus the other teams that are there and their qualities. But also, I just think the momentum is going to be incredibly, incredibly important. The thing that they had been so good at that they didn't do in that game against Levante on Sunday really is you're 2-0 up away from home and they were far too open. You know, they needed in that circumstance to be a little bit more pragmatic. It's been a pleasure in the last couple of games to actually see them score more than just the one goal, but it has opened them up slightly defensively as well. They are a little bit lacking Elche in terms of a striker, and I haven't up until now seen that that's caused them a huge issue because they've had goals coming from other areas. But, if they can overcome that in the final games and they can tighten back up at the back, then, they stand one hell of a chance, I think.
Yeah, I would agree on Elche. I think they are the team that have impressed me most, I would say, outside of Leganés, just in terms of the quality of football, how clear they are and how they want to play. I still cannot believe they lost that match last night. I know we have to give Miñambres credit for making the changes and swinging the game as it happened, but I felt for an hour that it was obvious that Levante needed to just bring on an extra midfielder and match up in the middle. And eventually they somehow swung it back to 3-2. After Elche had missed a huge chance at one end, they take a goal kick, smash it up the pitch. The ball settles and they somehow work a chance from nothing, as Bekezese basically said. So I think those errors are quite fixable from the Levante game. And yeah, I despite the defeat, I think I still left impressed at the way they played overall, to be honest.
I think as well, you've got to remember that Levante are in a pretty unique position in comparison to some of the teams in the division, in that they were very much, I think, last night in last chance saloon. If they'd have lost last night, I think they're obviously not mathematically, but realistically in terms of the distance that there would have been between, not only the points distance between them and six, but the number of teams that were between them and sixth position that they would have to be better than in the remaining 10 games. So it was last chance saloon for them, and they could basically come out swinging at 2-0 down. And really just go for the game. And as you say, Elche had a pretty late chance, and it was Murad. And Murad, bless him, was on loan at Burgos last season and was their sort of third or fourth choice striker. Didn't really get much of a game off the bench for Burgos and has been thrown into this figure of leading striker, leading centre forward at Elche. And up until a few weeks ago, had a pretty torrid time in front of goal. And on this occasion, it was him that, I'm not even sure it was much of a chance for him, but what he did do is he blocked the cross, which was going to a teammate. And as you say, then everything that happened afterwards happened. So I suppose that's my only concern for Elche in the centre forward position, really.
And then, so we talked about Levante there and being kind of, they probably are, that's where the cutoff point is in terms of teams that could potentially go up. And even at that, they're a fairly watery option at intent. They're on 47 points, just a point behind Oviedo. But when you look at the teams there, and I know that they're not traditional La Liga big hitters, but there's some really good teams there. So you got your Leganés, Espanyol, who you say might finish first and second, or Elche, sorry. But I was really impressed with Eibar, Pero Nolasquine, and Mateus Pereira, and then John Bautista up front is just a killer. They've got Stoichkov. I just think Mario Soriano, the Atletico Madrid number 10. So even as far down in ninth as Oviedo, who have just taken a step forward under Carrion, and they play a lovely style of football. Santi Cazorla in the middle, starting to influence games now. But a lot of these teams just keep on kind of tripping themselves up. Even Eibar at the weekend, man sent off, leading 1-0 against Valladolid, ended up losing inevitably 3-1 in away from home. Like, there's a lot of really good teams there that could potentially lose out. Who are the best team, do you think, that will probably end up losing out?
I think probably Eibar. I think, not taking into account the playoffs, of course, but in terms of missing out on the top two, I would say probably Eibar. I do agree with you, I think, in terms of the attacking quality that they've got. Bautista has had a very good season and actually been on pretty good form this second half of the season. He's really sprung to life. But I think centre forward is definitely an area where they're a little bit weaker. But that front four that they've got is pretty solid in terms of selection now. There's not many changes that happen in that front four, certainly in the second half of the season. And as you say, they've got so much quality with Akeche, with Soriano, with Stoichkov, and those three behind Bautista. But I do think that there are scars at Eibar from the last two seasons, missing out as they did, and then obviously collapsing in the playoffs afterwards. I think there are scars there. And they are a very, very good team. They are also quite reliant on their form in Ipurua. And the other thing that I think is they can score possibly a better quality goal from outside of the box than most teams in the division, particularly with someone like Akeche who strikes it so well. And because of that, I just wonder, and I don't know if the statistics bear this out or not, but I think they have scored some brilliant goals this season from outside of the box that have maybe turned games and swung them in their favour. And you don't consistently score those throughout a season. So when those start to dry up, if you're not doing the basics as well, and they are doing the basics, of course, but you know, if they're winning a game 2-0 and one of them was, the opening goal was in the top corner and the second one came in the 80th minute when the opponents were pushing, it's a different 2-0 from making some really high value chances and putting one away. So I don't know if I've explained that very well from a stats point of view, but
Jamie's revving up the supercomputer now to figure out if that, he's going to come up with something.
I've got it right here, actually. No, the data would agree with Alex on this one. If you look at the data on expected goals for just as a measure of the chances of the quality of chances that a team are creating and conceding, the stats bear out as Eibar being the 10th best side in that respect. Obviously, we know chances created and conceded are only half the equation. You look at Andorra and what's happened with Eder Sarabia today. But yeah, I think there's probably a lot of truth in that Eibar rely on their difference makers to score or to dig out goals that perhaps they haven't generated in a flow as much as a team like Elche would, where, you know, yesterday, you know, they lost, but again, they were so fluent on the attacking end, committing so many bodies forward. You can see the process really bearing out there as a means of creating chances. So, yeah, Eibar, it's quite surprising to see him that far down, to be honest. The only other thing to add, actually, just on a Eibar perspective, is yesterday, watching them against Real Valladolid, I don't think I've ever seen a team in the playoffs winning a game with a home crowd as unhappy as that. Can you just explain a bit on that, Alex, the situation with them and Pezzolano?
Yeah, well, it's less Pezzolano. I think Pezzolano is the one who's in the sort of in the eye of the storm, because he's almost the representative of the club that's stood on the touchline. It's more of a protest against Ronaldo, who owns the club or is president of the club and the ownership of the club and how the club's being run. They very much want him out. They're unhappy. They've been protesting all season about that fact. And Pezzolano is Ronaldo's man. So therefore, by extension, the protest extends to him as well. Now, they're in the top six, and we're in the business end of the season now. We're in the final 10 games of the season. I don't think it will happen, but there's nothing to say that they won't go on a great run and finish. They could even win the league. You know, you have a good last 10 games of the season. But I guess what I'm trying to explain here is that it's about more than what's happening on the pitch, and that the coach is getting the brunt of it. And that's largely because he is the representative of and also very close to Ronaldo. You know, he is Ronaldo's man. It's not just any old coach. He is very much Ronaldo's man. To the point where at the beginning of the season, there were some chants and things written by the fans, banners, I think, written, which was basically Brazilians go home, which obviously the use of that language is it's not even borderline, is it? It's going above and beyond views about how a football club is run, and really not good to see. So, yeah, it's a very toxic situation at Real Valladolid. And we have an English podcast and we also have a Spanish podcast. And we've talked about that very point this evening on the Spanish podcast, to say that really, if they want the owners to leave, then surely the best thing would be to get back into La Liga and make the club a more saleable asset. We only have to look at the likes of Real Zaragoza to realise that it doesn't matter how big you are as a club, you are not guaranteed anything in Segunda.
Absolutely. And when I said earlier there that Jamie's going to get it up on the computer, Jamie's brain is actually a computer. He's a robot. We're going to reveal at the end of the season that Jamie has been an AI bot all this time, just spitting out stats and facts. But talking about underachievers, then I think you're talking about that, and it's going to be hard for Valladolid to sustain that. Say, for example, they don't make the top two with automatic promotion. They have to go through the playoffs, which are a real lottery in many cases. Like we saw Rayo coming up from sixth place one time, and Eibar collapsing, and it'll be hard for them, for Valladolid, with that toxicity, to sustain a playoff run, regardless of how good they are, regardless of how well they're coached, regardless of the talent on the team. So that's an interesting one to pay attention to. And then you look on the flip side of that, you look at a team like Real Oviedo, and you feel like if they could just manage to get into sixth, all that energy that that they've been saving up for the last, I don't know how many years, where they've been just on the brink. You think that might actually carry them over. But there are some giants of Spanish football. And I say that not that Real Oviedo have been in La Liga. They haven't been in La Liga in years now, but there are huge teams down here. And you mentioned one, Real Zaragoza. Levante have been a La Liga side in recent years. Different teams like that, and other teams who were really good last year and have just completely collapsed this year. So you got your Albacete, who Ruben Alves, a really good coach, another manager who I think will translate better to maybe a higher quality and will definitely have job opportunities whenever he decides to leave. Or Albacete, Eder Sarabia has left, or he's been fired by Andorra. Of all the underperformers this year, which team is the most disappointing for you so far, Alex?
Yeah, you've mentioned quite a few. I'm just very quickly going to mention Albacete because they're not my underperformers, but they are huge underperformers. But they're a team that I've got such a soft spot for in terms of the way that they play and everything you just said about Ruben Alves. They're another team, you know, I mentioned a moment ago about Racing Santander, and if there's a, you know, not so attractive La Liga game on, well, if Albacete are playing, get them on. If Albacete are away at Racing Santander, even better. Terrific value always. But biggest underperformers for me have been Real Zaragoza. Obviously, you mentioned them a moment ago, and we haven't compared notes. they would be my underperformers. Just they had such momentum in the summer. They had such momentum. They brought in a new sporting director. They made a raft of signings. For example, Michael Messer, who has been very good for them this season, to be fair. He's probably the only one who's stood up and done his job well, I think, this season. But they brought in Sinan Bakis, who was the main striker at Andorra last season. 12 goals last season for Andorra. He's not scored at all this season. Granted, he's only played 14 games because he has had a pretty healthy patch with injury. But Marc Aguado as well was another one. He also was at Andorra, but Real Zaragoza's player on loan at Andorra last season. And he was so, so key for them. So there's a little bit of a story there as to why Andorra have dropped off their two key players from last season have left and gone to Real Zaragoza. But you'd expect Real Zaragoza's form to pick up, and it really hasn't. You know, they have been so, so poor, and as much as anything else, really poor to watch as well. They're on to their third coach this season now. And yeah, just a real disappointment, particularly when, you know, they did this business in the summer. The Zaragoza fans quite rightly got very excited. They appointed the wrong coach for a start, and they're a bit unlucky with Bakis not hitting form and then getting injured and not really having another striker of quality to do it. But the fans saw what was happening at the club. They felt the excitement, which I felt last summer, and they backed the team. Now, the attendances at Zaragoza are always very, very good in Segunda. Of course, they're a huge club. But they have sold something like 29,500 season tickets. It's incredible in the second division in Spanish football. I think it was a sellout against Espanyol over 30,000 in La Romareda the weekend before last. And yeah, it's just been so disappointing to see how poor they've been under two coaches, and hopefully not under the third in the last 10 games of the season, because if they continue to be, there is still a chance that they could just get caught by the teams below them.
Yeah, Jamie has one more question to ask there, but I just want to jump in on that because I felt the excitement. And Miguel Quintana from Marca put out a tweet saying, who's the best sporting director in the Segunda? And there were almost offended by this question. It was obviously Cordero. It was obvious Real Zaragoza were after putting together a summer up for the ages. And I thought so too. I was like, this team, they're they're going to walk away with this league. And after the first five games, me and Jamie kind of spoke about the Segunda, and we were like, oh yeah, I mean, it looks like Zaragoza's to lose. And now all of a sudden, it's just been one disappointment after another. We went there, me and a couple of mates went to Zaragoza to watch Cartagena, dominated the ball, dominated chances, and they lost. And it was just like, I think if there was a right answer, an objectively correct answer, I think Zaragoza is it, because I think this, if you're talking about transfer markets, transfer windows for the ages, last summer, this has been the disappointing season for the ages this year for them. And, yeah, and it will be interesting to see just what they do in the summer, because it might take a root and branch analysis of what's after happening, and they might tear the whole thing down.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key for me is that the sporting director, Cordero, in terms of recruitment of players, did what I think is a really good job. There's good players in there. They're just a little bit light at centre forward. But we forget, don't we, that it's not just the playing squad that the sporting director is in charge of recruiting. It's the head coach. And the head coach is the most important one of them all. If you don't get that appointment correct, then, you know, you could give them, you know, the messy team, the messy Barcelona team, you know, of choose whichever era you like when he was there, and they wouldn't achieve what they were capable of achieving. And they've made bad choice again in terms of coach, and I think actually they've made a third bad choice in terms of coach as well.
Yeah, well, it started so promising this season. Like Robbie said, me and him were both all aboard the Zaragoza bandwagon, but it's ended very badly. I agree on the Cordero point. I thought they had all the ingredients, assembled a really good squad. I still look at it now and think, how has it underperformed so badly? The one thing I couldn't understand from Cordero's point of view was hiring Velasquez. I mean, yeah, I don't know why you would hire that guy, with all due respect. I just don't think he's got a particularly good track record. The style of play was not a great departure from Escriba. So yeah, we spoke about Zaragoza so well early on, and we'll try and reverse jinx them the other way now by saying how bad they are. But yeah, just to finish off, we wanted to ask you, not including the three players we named at the top of the show, give us one player you think could be making noise in La Liga across the next few years.
Yeah, well, I promise you that I wrote this down before we started recording, because whilst we've been recording, he's actually scored.
I've seen it.
Yeah, Iker Lasada of Racing Club de Ferrol, who can play on the left-hand side, can also play, more generally plays as number 10, basically. He's another one of these players, very similar to Peque and to Inigo Vicente that we were talking about earlier. A lot of quality, really good eye for goal. I'm probably cheating a little bit when I'm saying someone who's probably going to be seen in La Liga, because there are already very strong rumours that there's going to be an acquisition from well, the La Liga clubs are queuing up this summer, because I believe, that his clause is around $1.5 million, but he's a terrific player, and that amount of money for that club would be huge. Of course, we saw Vicente, wasn't it? Go to Alaves, wasn't it? In the winter window, his buyout clause paid by Alaves, it was only about €500,000, which I know in Spanish terms is for some La Liga clubs still quite a lot of money. But they didn't get great value, Racing Club de Ferrol, from that transfer, although €500,000 for them is still a lot of money. But I believe they have a better clause for Lazada. And Celta are one of the teams that are interested in him, and they let him go on a free in the summer. So speaking of sporting directors, there's... I'm not an expert on Celta, nor too many La Liga things, obviously focusing very much on Segunda, but it doesn't look to be the best decision that they've ever made there.
We won't get into Celta Vigo's decision making here. We were a bit of a sore point. We were high on Rafa Benitez, and it hasn't turned out well for them. And another disappointing team this season, albeit in La Liga. So yeah, Alex, great stuff. If anyone's interested in listening to that kind of detailed analysis of the Spanish Segunda Division, make sure to check out the lads' podcast. It's brilliant. It's on our playlist every week, and we learn a lot every time we listen to it, as we have tonight. We'll get you back on for when the playoffs start, or possibly during the playoffs or after the playoffs, and maybe even during the summer, just to talk about some transfer business.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on. And just to say, for anyone that hasn't listened to the podcast, one of the things that we are very, very passionate about is we are very passionate about the league as a whole. And we try to talk about, obviously, within one show, we can't possibly talk about 22 teams and what's happened in that match day, because it just would be impossible. But across the weeks, talk about all 22 teams in the division, from the biggest like Real Zaragoza that have got 30,000 season ticket holders, to the smallest like Amorebieta that have got just the 2,000 and don't even play in their own ground. So, you know, if listening to that sort of variety and getting to know a little bit more about Segunda, which is just such an exciting division, if that's the sort of thing that you're interested in, then come on over, give us a go, and I hope that you won't be disappointed when you do.
Absolutely, yeah. As preparation for this, myself and Jamie got stuck into the Segunda, and we've been watching for a couple of years. You won't be disappointed with the talent on display in Segunda. There's some old heads knocking around with loads of quality, and then some of the younger guys coming through, great coaches, loads of storylines, and yeah, we'll be following it for the run-in. But from myself, Jamie, and Alex, tonight on La Pausa Pod, it is adios.